Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, and he said he's Stargate. We're on bbsradio.com if you want to check it out there. We're also on Rumble, VMO, he said he TV. We're all over the place, so things are really picking up there. There's so much news. I want to jump into that before we get to our guests, but I'm sure many have heard that Trump was indicted. You know, the case is a last-ditch effort by the deep state to avoid charges of what can only be called treason. So it's a misdemeanor of which the statute of limitations have run out, attached to a federal charge, which is already dismissed, being prosecuted by a state DA that does not have the jurisdiction. So, exculpatory evidence removed, not allowed, which means pretty much the case is already has no merit. So there was a lot of evidence that was not allowed that wasn't put in there. And so it's just going to be thrown out, basically. The DA, Alvin the Chipmunk Bragg, you know, has a well-documented history of Trump derangement syndrome. So, the QAnon shaman was just released due to the same reason. So just remember that exculpatory evidence, was not allowed, and that would exonerate him. Stormy Daniels also did a press release saying that she never had sex with Trump. And this is election tampering 3.0. So the gloves are off now. I would expect some major boomerangs on this one. And say a prayer for the folks in Idaho and Arkansas. Extremely destructive tornadoes have been moving through. Some say it's weather wars. My belief it's due to the massive solar storms and flares, that are always followed by severe weather. We've talked a lot about this. I'm not saying there aren't weather wars going on. But, I know there's a lot of hanky-panky with those train derailments, right in the heart of mega country, you might say. Many of the latest mass shootings were done by non-binary or transgenders. They left manifestos, something the mainstream media won't address. No word from the Justice Department's on investigations into hate crimes against Christians. The only focus has been on the guns, not the operators. It was very clear in their manifestos and their tweets and things like that, that these people want to take out as many Christians and children as they can, Christian children. So it's a no-brainer, folks. It's a hate crime, period. End of story. So Elon Musk refused to allow the call for transgenders to arm themselves on Twitter. And the Transgender Arm Yourself Day event, BLM is pushing that one. And their calls for violence, as he should. He's saying, no, you're not going to do that on my platform. He also called out for a hold on AI. He said, it's just too dangerous where it's going. And I say, go Elon. He's really looking out for what's highest and best good of the people there. According to Matt Gaetz, the DOD is paying for transgender performances for children on military bases. The general said they knew nothing of this. Could this be part of the demoralization program that's been in full swing during the warmongering Biden administration? How does World War III fit into the depopulation program? Will a nuke care about your gender, the color of your skin, your political affiliation? Let's not mention the weaponization of the agencies against any freedom-loving person. It's time to wake up, folks. We're in the middle of it. So these people that are running the show here don't care what color you are. They don't care what gender you are. They don't care what your religion affiliation is. They don't even care what your political affiliation is. You are scheduled to be, well, just let you figure that one out. But anyway, that's the news. And so we're going to get back to the show, hopefully. Our guest, Don Kane, is a graduate engineer and a lifelong contactee spanning some 65 years. Don worked with NASA, Rocketdyne, and other aerospace contractors on the, HAWCS, Advanced Welding Robot Systems for the Space Shuttle main engine, participated in the systems review after the Challenger accident, and assisted with numerous other projections related to the space shuttle. He also works with Intel on utilizing the first prototype Pentium processor chips for robot controls. His experience has allowed him to see a different world from the one portrayed in the media. A little dark NASA there. Don is known as a fixer. Someone gets called when things are broken, and a left and right brain person who sees all things that people don't see. Anyway, over the years, Don has explored hypnosis, NLP, some modalities, navigate the pieces and connect with the contactee experience. And I can attest to Don being the fixer, because Eddie said he's fixed a lot of things that just did not want to work, like gates and everything else, all kinds of programs on the. So anyway, he's been a great asset to helping out Eddie over the years, and he's had some major experiences at Eddie. So without any further ado, I want to bring Don on the show. Don, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thanks a lot, James. I really appreciate it.
I can't believe this computer worked. I actually got everything up that I needed to look at and read. And, things are, I don't want to jinx it, but things are going fine here, and which is usually not the case. But
I really appreciate it. And just for the audience, I want to bring up an important point and a salient point. One thing first, James, I'm dedicating this to the one true God, the being that created this universe and his mother, father to us all. And I just wanted to bring that out to everybody. I don't leave a religious life, but my spiritual purpose and my spiritual intents unwavered. And with that, I wanted to bring up this point because it has a lot to do with my ET experiences. And sometimes, maybe all the times now, I feel that the people that are in control of disseminating ET information refuse to bring this very important point up. When I was at Contact in the Desert 2019, that's with my good friend Linda Green, very good dowser, somebody who picks up on vibrational frequency. And she says, I want to go hear James speak. He's speaking next. And we were running across the campus there at Contact in the Desert to get to where you were. We open up the room and it's packed. It's wall to wall with people. And you're just beginning your talk. We couldn't find any place but a couple of chairs in the back rows. And you could have heard a pin drop in that session. People were eager to hear what you had to say. They wanted to hear what you had to say. And nobody left. There was, you know, people came in and they stood along the walls. But, you know, compared to other speakers, Linda Green did a dowsing on you. And she goes, wow. James is dowsing at the highest frequency of anybody at the conference so far, and it stayed that way. So
they had that's pretty much why they haven't asked me back. You know.
And you bring a valuable, important perspective and message. I tell people, if Christianity were 3,000 years in the future, how would it be different? What would it be like? And you know, what refinements would we make? Because we're still playing out the old political hide and seek games now. So I think that the message that God and Jesus wanted us to most have is coming through clearer and clearer every day and in every way. And, you know, I think you bring that message.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's, you know, I've come to terms with it's been going on for so long, and there's this massive distraction going on that, you know, that there's an external savior going to come and fix everything. And then there's an external God, and people blame God or give credit to God for everything and don't take personal responsibility. And if you look at the external savior, you know, and if you put Jesus in there, what he said was God is within, the temple is within. And he made it very clear, you know, they said, where's God? And he said, closer than the hair on your head. You know, so, I mean, you are God, everyone and everything is God. And it's not a little old man with a beard. I mean, they existed, those were the gods of old, the ancient Lyrians. And when people ask me, they go, don't you believe in God? And I go, well, you know, or they say, I don't believe in God. And I say, well, which God don't you believe in? You know, because there's two Hebrew gods, you know, Jehovah and Yahweh, the old jealous, wrathful God of the past, which was kind of a genocidal maniac. And then they had the all-loving, all-forgiving God, you know, the new covenant that Jesus brought. And then you've got the Greek gods, you've got the Egyptian gods, you've got, I can go on and on. There's so many different beings. And, you know, the fact of the matter, they all existed and they're part of our ancient history. And these were some very advanced beings, and some were very loving and compassionate and tried to help us to evolve to our highest potential. But there were some that were tyrants that were here. They were very judgmental and very wrathful. And, you know, just read the end of Ezekiel if you want to figure that one out. You know, six men with their shattering weapons, you know, destroyed the whole city of Israel. And, you know, it goes on and on. But that wasn't God. And people need to realize they need to know their real history, the true history of Earth, and then they can figure it out.
True history of Earth, yes. I with that being said, the reason I have this backdrop behind me is from the time I was a little boy, that was my first memory. This Milky Way behind me, that was my first memory, and I always assumed that this was me floating in the ether with God based on what I was trying to figure out at the time as a little boy. And in reality, it was something completely different. My ET experience, I think there are astrological contracts, meaning that astrological ages like the Piscean age, the Aquarian age, you know, these 2,000-year-old contracts, and things are spelled out in, there's letter of the law type legalese in it. And, you know, you end up getting a room full of lawyers trying to figure out what can you get away with and what can't you get away with. And I think one of the things that a lot of experiencers have is they don't have the kind of memories that we associate with conscious waking moments. We just don't, you know, whether our memories are wiped or whatever. In my case, I think they did a letter of the law, a little sweep, where they said, okay, well, we'll wipe his memory, but what about Gestalt memories? Gestalt memories are vastly different. Those are those anchoring memories, like the first time you were held by your mother, or the first time that you received love as a child, or the first time that you were chastised or beaten for doing something that wasn't your fault. You know, these Gestalt memories are vastly different, and I don't think they're covered in the letter of the law contracts that are written out by the competing agents' agendas that exist on the earth right now. And for that, when I was 2.5 years old and I was taken on board the ship, I woke up on the operating table, I'm looking up, and then there's three aliens talking about me like I'm in the third person. And I said, I could hear everything you're saying. Now, I think I heard it as a thought, and I just thought back to them. But they were shocked, and they're like, "But he's not supposed to be able to do that." And I clearly remember they're shocked at it, and they're talking to themselves, each other, and they decide to walk away from the examination table about 30, 40 feet. And start the conversation back up again. And I'm a little irritated. I'm 2.5 years old. I'm a little irritated. And I go, I can still hear everything you're saying. Like, that doesn't work for me, you know. And at that point, they walked out of the room. But things changed for me after that. And meaning that I was taken more frequently and often. And they focused on Gestalt type events. When I was 6 years old, I lived, my parents started to move us around, which is kind of unusual in hindsight, but my parents moved us. And in this case, they actually moved us to the edge of town next to a woods in a big open field, which is like, hey, you need a landing strip right here, buddy. We got it for you. And I woke up, I think I was 5.5. It was summertime, and in Ohio, we didn't have air conditioning back then. And I go downstairs and TV's off, and, you know, there's no sound coming from my parents' room. And I go to the front door and the door's open, because that's what we did in Ohio in the summertime. We left things open. And I look out and I see a ship landing, and I'm like, whoa, this is, and I turn around and go, Mom, Dad. And the next thing I know, I'm in my bed upstairs. It's sunset, and I'm on my knees, not under the covers. I'm on top of the bed, and I'm going like, where, what just happened? And I turn around and I look out the window, and it's sunset. And I can hear my dad talking to one of his employees down below. And I'm totally confused. And I go down the stairs to tell my dad what happened. My dad goes, oh, you just had a dream. And I'm like, this was not a dream. And I kind of like, at that point, I said, okay, adults, you know, you're not being of service here. So, but that stayed with me my whole life. And I could never figure out if I went forward in time or backward in time, but I knew that time had shifted. And I don't know if it was a whole day or I went back, 5 or 6 hours, but I lived with that my whole life. And it's one of those things, it just doesn't go away. It doesn't disappear. You know, you can say, oh, you did this, or it was a dream. No, it's not. It's like, you, one moment you're there and the next moment you're somewhere else. And it's not the only time that's happened to me, but it was the first time. Right after that, I started seeing a battleship on stormy seas, like being on the bridge of a World War II battleship in stormy seas. And it wasn't a cruise ship. It was a battleship. Big guns, that sort of thing. And I'd go to school, and teacher would be talking to me in class, and the image of this battleship on stormy seas was almost so thick in my consciousness that I'd have to almost literally brush it away to, you know, do classwork. And I talked to my parents about it, which was probably a mistake. And they sent me to somebody to talk about it, and I talked to them about it, and that went nowhere. A lot of my mom's friends thought it was a past life experience, and in fact, I thought it was a past life experience. And I worked with a Dr. Dorothy Nettermeyer in Phoenix, who's a really good therapist. Psychologist, and she's very big on hypnosis and researching past lives. And she thought my case would have been a classic past life experience. Did a couple of hypnosis on me, nothing. And we turned up something possibly, but normally when she does past life regressions and hits one, it resolves a lot of things. For me, the battleship only became more real, bigger, more in color, and it wasn't going away. It didn't go away really until I worked with Yvonne Smith. And the funny thing was, when I worked with Yvonne Smith, she didn't even have to really put me down very hard. We're doing the hypnosis thing, and all of a sudden it was like, well, technically we can't keep your memories locked up, but if you work with somebody who's a therapist unlocks memories, well, then all bets are off. We, you know, that's not part of the agreement, that we have to keep those memories locked up. And so they just unfolded. It was almost like a picture book, or one of those. Just single snapshots of experience just unfurling. And that battleship on stormy seas was a city ship, maybe 7.5 miles long, maybe a couple miles wide, maybe another mile to the bridge. And where I was at was on the bridge looking down. And it was, there may have been about 35,000 souls on board. And I say the word soul because there were synthetics that carried out a lot of the maintenance manual work on board, maybe as many of them as there were souls, and different races at different levels of advancement. The founding race that built that ship was a 6D race. And they were pretty much non-corporeal. They were light bodies, as far as I could say. And my teacher, the person that worked with me, would manifest eyes. But if they wanted to teach, they would envelop. They would envelop me, and all of a sudden, I knew everything that they wanted to communicate. I knew it, and I was in touch with it, and it was a beautiful experience, and it was a positive experience, and it left me with a deep intuitive connection to source, and by that I mean God. It had a lot of positive effects on my life. I did things that saved people. I knew people were going to be in trouble. There was a lady, I was in Washington, D.C., and there was a lady who crossed the street. I even know her name still, Vicki Dutcher. And she started out across a busy intersection, and I could hear a car coming up from over a hill. And I was told right away that this car is going to hit her in the side of her legs, and it's going to cripple her, if she may never walk right ever again. And so I didn't think, I mean, there might've been 15 people standing on that street corner. I ran out, picked her up, and turned myself so that the car would take me out from the back of my feet, and then it rolled me up onto the hood, and I wasn't hurt. And she wasn't hurt, but she looks at me like, what are you doing, mister? You know, and all of a sudden she realized, and she said, I don't think I would have been able to walk again. And I said, I'm pretty sure you wouldn't have, but you know, I'm grateful we didn't have to find out. And those kind of experiences, you know, happen pretty regularly. And the fixer part, a lot of times, working on robot control stuff, we had some important robot controls, and I was a fixer. So our president said, you know, we need to develop other people that can do this and fix these things. So, you know, we're gonna let them. And 2-3 weeks goes by, and it's still not fixed yet. And there's 3 engineers and 4 technicians working on it full time. And finally, I walk in after lunch, and he goes, I've blankety blank had it. I've never heard this guy cuss before, but it was every other syllable. I blankety blank had that. You go out there and blankety blank fix this blankety blank thing. We need it now. And I walked out and they see me coming and they go, we don't need you. We've got it all figured out. And I asked them, how long do you think it'll take me to fix it? And they go, there's a technician says 10 minutes. And I go, Billy, I can't believe you'd say 10 minutes. And I walked over and I got the information and I followed that information. And 3 minutes later, I pulled two wires off a military spec connector, two wires that powered a hard drive that was preventing the system from operating. It would boot up and those wires would shake around or vibrate and it would cause a power loss and they would shut down. And so I pulled the two wires out and they looked at me like, how could you possibly have figured that out?
Yeah, definitely, I understand that one. I had something much more benign than that, you might say, with a van. This woman had a Volkswagen van and we were going up to Shasta with the whole group. And pulled out, and the car started running really bad, really bad. And we pulled over, and I just saw what it was. And it was one of the plug wires. And we opened up the thing, and I grabbed the plug wire, and I just pushed it in a little further because it had slipped out, you know, and I just pushed it in a little further. And I go, start it up, just start it up perfectly, and finish the trip, you know. And that's not as intricate as yours, but it's funny how you just know. And you don't know why you know, you don't even know where it came from. You just know. And I think that goes into that. It's kind of a level called direct knowing, where you just know things. And it's a level of conscious, or it's a city, you know, it's one of the abilities that come to people. And you just know, and you don't know why or where that comes from.
Yeah, I would agree. I know being around you, you'd pick up on stuff and go, there's a ship out there. And there was, in fact, a ship out there. It was a big enough ship that I was able to whip out my camera and videotape it for 3.5 minutes. And it was the only light in the sky at sunset. And there were no stars, no planets yet visible. And yet this thing, and it was big. It was very big. And it was moving slowly. And the funny thing was, I'm like, how did James know? How did he know? And then I go inside myself and I go, what felt different? What was, and that's the NLP side of, of what, and this NLP actually, when I first started doing NLP, actually NASA, paid for it because they were looking for better ways to train people to operate robot systems and machine tools and, you know, menu-based systems rather than the traditional G codes that we had all grown up with and the cryptic type of number system that just meant that there was just an elite few of people that could operate these machines. And the funny thing was, I started picking up on submodalities. It's like when you know what that something absolutely certainly know, like tomorrow the sun's going to rise, or that I have a car, or I have a set of car keys. And when I know the sun's going to rise in the morning, I see a picture of the sunset and it's centered in my vision. It's perfectly centered and located. It's in color. It's more horizontal than vertical. It's a moving picture. It's not bordered, doesn't have a box around it. On the same token, things that I doubt, like I doubt the Cleveland Browns are going to win the Super Bowl. And a picture of that, it's always, for me, when I doubt things, I see an image, it's in black and white, it's down and to my left, It's square. It's very two-dimensional, like a photograph almost. Mm-hmm. And these submodalities exist in our mind, and those submodalities are pretty constant for people. They're pretty constant. Like somebody, like they always buy Toyotas, or they always like buy Cadillac, or they always, and a lot of it has to do that the submodalities just match up with their, what they want. And being around you, I was able to calibrate my submodalities and say, oh, that's interesting. I have a set of submodalities for that I didn't even know I had. And becoming aware and being able to feel, see, hear, taste the nuance, the subtlety, really makes a big difference. And I'm nowhere near, definitely not near as good as you are, but I was out in Pinedale, Wyoming, and somebody said to me, do you think there's ships up there? And I went, let me see, or let's arrange my submodalities. Boop, doop, doop. Okay, we're connecting. Hey guys, could you power up and show us that you're there and directly above us? Ship powered up, pop, down, pop, again, pop, again. And they're like, wow.
I have people on Telegram and other things saying that you have no evidence that you're in contact. They tell me all the time, we have no evidence that you're in contact. And I go, well, we have 40 years of telling people exactly when and where the ships would appear. And we did it with Paranormal State and all these other people that came to the ranch. But unfortunately, Paranormal State covered it really well. We gave them the exact time the ship would come. And Chip Coffee, their psychic that they brought out, gave the exact same information. The ship did come at 10 o'clock, in the east, northeast. And we said, have the cameras rolling. And they did get it. And they admitted it, that everything was. But the other guys, like Ancient Aliens, we had myself, Peter Slattery, and John Vivanco all said, look, there's going to be a massive ship this time. It's going to be in the north towards the mountain. Have your cameras ready. And they just ignored it. They're too busy doing their little dance show or whatever, and they missed everything. And it's sad. And then you hand them all this incredible footage, undeniable footage, and they sanitized all of it, So it's funny, you always get these trolls saying, well, you don't have contact. That's not contact. And I go, when you have five ships come over your head and power up exactly when you ask them to, and you know exactly when and where they're appearing, that's pretty much, it's not a fluke, that's contact. That's telepathic contact.
Oh, look, you can't rely on the media for anything. Yeah. When I worked for NASA, supposedly everybody believes that we built three space shuttles. When the Challenger blew up, we did it. We had to do a systems review of all the things that we were involved with. And we did this down at Marshall Space Flight Center. And Chip Jones, the NASA administrator for that phase, he was pretty much a managerial level type guy, but he was involved with the systems on board the space shuttle. And I think Chip was involved then with the space station. We were just putting space station modules together at that time. And we're in a meeting, and I piped up and I said, well, how can Reagan build a replacement shuttle in 18 months? Just the quality control program on it, it's 18 months. I said, that doesn't even leave time to build it. And Joel Racy from Rocketdyne looked right at me, and he says, they'll just transfer one from the military program over to the civilian one. And my eyes were like, what? He says, yeah. He said, they got two military shuttles. I can just drop one over. I said, well, what'll the military do? And Joel Racy looked me right in the eye and he said, they got better ways to get stuff up there now. And yeah. I was wondering, you know, Joel showed me a video of them doing an orbital well with a Diametrics tube welder. And that program to do that orbital well is more than 2 minutes. And the funny thing is that I think your best vomit rocket, zero G, lasts only a minute and a half, if maybe a minute and 10 seconds. You know, it doesn't go more than 2 minutes. And and that they've done this complete orbital well, and it's on video, so there's no disputing it. And he showed it to me like, hey, what do you think of this, Don? And I said, how did you make that on a vomit rocket? He said, exactly, how did we? You know, his eyes went real big. And so you got these technicians who are fearless, literally just fearless. The only reason that we got a space shuttle up there to begin with, because you had guys like that with, you know, just fearless types that would go for it and do the right thing. And they had an intrinsic knowledge of what was right and how to get it done right. And they also knew their limitations. And when they ran into their limitations, they stopped. And he said, we got to come up with a better way. And, but my point being is that there were five military shuttles, and I walked into a Lockheed Skunk Works where we had a big painting robot system that supposedly it was designed to paint the radar reflective paint on the stealth bomber. And it was a pretty massive 3-story tall robot with an arm that swung out 50 feet. And it was on a guided vehicle track that would drive around it. And we go in there. You got to have a top secret security clearance just to go in there. And they didn't have time to move something that was off to the side. And it was real clear to me that it was another stealth plane, pretty good sized one. And I looked at him and I said, what is that, a stealth AWACS? And he said, that's just a bunch of boxes, Don. Please, for God's sake, it's just a bunch of boxes. Yeah. So, you know, they used to say the F-117 needed an AWACS in order to fly. Doesn't make sense to fly an AWACS that lights up the night sky like nobody's business. Yeah. So that you let your secret stealth fighters get to their targets. So, that kind of stuff we ran into, there were a lot of interesting things that happened. You know, if you wanted to get real information, you could go to Jane's Aviation Weekly and read the comments section where, you know, we were in Albuquerque, New Mexico at Albuquerque Airport. And I think this was 84. And there's a flying brickbat, mostly looked like black shuttle tiles. And it had just landed. Obviously wasn't supposed to land there. It was supposed to land somewhere else, but they didn't have any choice. Mm-hmm. It's hot. I mean, it is so hot that the heat is just radiating off of it. And, you know, people are, you know, there's a couple of ambulance or there's a couple of cars out there watching it, but I don't think they wanted to draw a lot of attention. So they didn't want a lot of fire trucks or anything out there. And they're just, you know, like, I don't know how long it took for them to cool it down to where they could roll it into a hangar and people could forget about it. But Those are the kinds of things that are happening all over the country, all the time. And guess what? Our media could care less. Why? Because they're paid to care less. Yeah. And that's the truth. And people see it more and more each day. You know, why?
The whistleblowers are all coming out with information. A lot of them are saying late 60s, we're going back and forth to the moon and Mars and with counter-gravity ships and things like that. And I know the Germans were back engineering those things back in the 30s as well. They had some ships, and there's rumors that they went to the moon along with the Japanese, I guess, and it was a one-way ticket. There's a lot of stories about that, but they seem to be corroborated by a lot of the whistleblowers. And I know I can't talk too much about it, but I know some people that worked at Area 51, and they told me some of the things they had. It's mind-blowing stuff, things that were sentient, ships that were sentient and things like that. But I mean, we have all that technology, and you know, the beings that I work with, they said it's already on the planet. Everything you need to take a quantum leap in technology and clean up your environment and heal and everything, it's all there. It's on your planet now. It's just not in the right hands, you know. So I think it's soon to come in the right hands.
Yeah. A lot of competing agendas, aren't there?
Yeah. And that's, God, you don't even want me to go there. But if I want to talk about competing agendas in the UFO community, I've never seen so much competition and backstabbing and one-upmanship and jealousy, just pure jealousy. It's just like, I go, guys, wait a second. The original intent was contact, right? We're supposed to be working towards having contact with hopefully spiritually and technologically advanced beings and not any degenerate ones, you know, and they are out there too. And in the interest of national security, if there are degenerate ETs out there, we should be making friends with the benevolent ones, you know, that have our best interests at heart. But you see all this nonsense, and it's funny because when you bring so much information to the table, so much is so far outside the box. It's not nuts and bolts. It has a spiritual component and to it and things like that. Boy, there are people in the community that are actually running the show right now, and it's a controlled narrative, and they just do not want that out, that information out.
Right. The strength of the control is so obvious. And when contact in the desert was done out in the desert, and it didn't have air conditioning, and it was, you know, it was a kind of a gypsy band of brothers and sisters that came together to talk about contact. That was one thing. When it became a professional production in an air-conditioned hotel with happy hour and George Norrie coming out and speaking and dinner and
singing.
You know what? It's entertainment for what?
Exactly.
It's not. We already have contact. The thing is there's this illusion that we need the government to say that. No, we don't. In fact, if the last thing we need is the government to get involved in contact.
Yeah.
If we can do an end run around them, and I think we're allowed to do that, by the way, the letter of the law. And the reason I'm bringing that up is I've seen lawyers on board our ship that weren't brought up. They were brought up in suits and suit in briefcases, and they were allowed to leave with their memories. And they're just going over, pouring over documents to, you know, verify that, you know, there are other ways to communicate now. And I think that'll be the case.
Yeah, I do too. I know, I always tell people, you know, there's no go-betweens. You know, as far as making your own personal contact with Creator, God, Great Spirit, whatever name you want to give it, there's no go-betweens. And that's just creating a dependency. And the same thing with contact with these very spiritually and technologically advanced beings. If you got a go-between, you know, that go-between can take you wherever they want to take you. And a lot of them aren't that as clear as they would like to be. And some of them are influenced by some unseen negative influences and some negative influences willingly, because there is a lot of controlled opposition and chills and things like that. But, you know, I tell people, when you hear somebody bragging about their connection with the Rockefellers and they're part of the Rockefeller Initiative, and they brag about their connections with the Clintons and the Podestas and some of the parties they went to and things like that, I mean, right away, you should be questioning these people, especially their integrity levels and the authenticity of what they're doing and the agenda behind it. And I just, it's amazing. People go, oh, he's famous. He knows all these people. And I go, you know, you got to sell your soul. It's become the same thing in the music industry, the movie industry, everything now. Contact, you got to sell your soul to and maintain the controlled narrative or you're out the door.
Well, look, they recruit mediocre talent.
Yeah.
And the reason they recruit mediocre talent is they're more beholding and they're more easy to blackmail and they're more insecure. You know, the really talented people are, they get overlooked and but their impact has become stronger and stronger, and no weapon prospers against God. No weapon prospers.
Yeah. Truth as
the
well.
Creator, the creator, has it all figured out in that regard. I agree with you. Connecting with source is just a willingness to find everybody that I choose to communicate with. I find, James, that they have a, and we've talked about this before, that everybody can relate to a divine spark, in that. They remember something, maybe when they were a baby, maybe when they were little, or maybe it's something before that, and I don't know. But they remember something, and it's the one thing that they can grab onto and hold on to. And, you know, it, to me, that's a parable, like the mustard seed. You know, yeah. It grows into the biggest of trees. And I just feel that people connecting with that I don't think there was any accident that Jesus said that love was important. And I think it's the greatest weapon we have. I think love is toxic to toxic people. And you know,
it's also a mirror. It's an amplifier and a mirror as well. So the more frequent, the more you connect to Creator, which is pure unconditional love and joy and bliss at the highest levels, the more of an amplifier you become and the more of a mirror you become. And all of a sudden your friends start falling off. And pretty soon you only got about 3 or 4 friends left. And all the other ones are doing everything they can, like the crab in the pot, to pull you back into the pot, right? And you're going, no, I'm not selling out. I'm going for it, you know? And it's kind of interesting watching this whole process going, but, you know, when people ask, you know, why aren't they here? Why aren't they landing on the planet? Well, they are here. They are landing on the planet. They are meeting with people who rose to the occasion.
Yeah. I can attest to that.
If you say they don't exist and you know, that's just your imagination. I just tell people, well, they are looking for intelligent life. You know, maybe you didn't qualify. You know?
You search out for the people that are at source. They're at,
yeah.
And I'm sure the The dark ones, they search for theirs.
But, yeah, they do.
But you know what? That's not us. So
yeah. Well, I always tell people, you know, we were joking about that. I always say, well, thank you for establishing your character and your ignorance, you know. And that was one of my comebacks to a lot of the stuff. And you know, the old three-finger approach, you know, one finger pointing forward, three pointing back. And that's always going on. And I go, you know what? We can all just rise to the occasion. This isn't a competition. You know, there's plenty of contact for everybody out there. Exactly. Everybody can make their own contact to creator. You know, there's no competition involved in this. So why is this a threat? You know, why is this a threat to people? You know, and it isn't a threat to people. It's a threat to those that are involved in the social engineering, whether it's been through religion or social media or whatever. It's a threat to those guys, because when you wake up and you make your own personal connection with creator and you realize who you are and where you came from, you can't be controlled anymore. And that is the biggest threat to them. You know, you don't need a go-between anymore either.
I agree with you so much. And I'm so glad you brought that up. You know, truth and justice have become a football that, you know, I asked people, I said, don't you care about truth? Don't you care about justice? And, well, we're not going to rerun elections. That just can't be done. And I said, well, of course not. We wouldn't want justice for ourselves or for our future kids or for my grandkids. We certainly wouldn't want justice for them. And they bicker back. But I've been told by my instructors that truth and justice, Jesus didn't make a mistake. He said thirst and hunger for them. That's a whole submodality grouping that is very, very powerful. You don't thirst and hunger for toilet paper. You don't thirst and hunger for,
yeah.
You know, I mean, to thirst for truth, like a glass of water and a man in a desert, that's an important admonition by the creator through Jesus, just how important truth is. And I think truth leads to greater discernment, but, in Egyptian time, they claim that truth led to light language, be able to interpret and read light language. And I never knew what light language was, but in the Egyptian hieroglyphics, they knew that the brain communicated, the cells, the nerve cells in the brain communicated photonically, that light emitted, that it was ascended, and that people who achieved a higher state of consciousness through greater discernment, greater truth, led a more pure life, they manifested halos. You hear, accounts of saints and spiritual people, even old pictographs of the Buddha with a halo. And I think it's no accident that you want to build up light in your body, search for truth and justice, and make it important.
Yeah, you know what? I was trying to tell people, I'm glad you brought that up about photonic communication, and that DNA is always communicating. And there's a photonic or a spiritual aspect to DNA, and an etheric aspect, whatever name you want to give it, to DNA. And you know, they'll put DNA in a glass jar and everything and some water, and all of a sudden the DNA will appear in the other water on the other side where there's nothing there. You know, they've done all these experiments and found out that our DNA is always communicating, and we have the DNA of the gods. you know, the ancient gods, the little g gods, we have their DNA along with a mix of other alien DNA, whatever you want to call it, off-world DNA or our ancestors that were here a long time ago, the very advanced ones. And so we're always communicating with these beings. We just don't know it. We don't realize we're always in communication. Whether or not we can perceive that communication depends on our spiritual adeptness, but we're always communicating. And I tell people, that's your ancestors up there. You know, you have their DNA. And, you know, and people don't understand. One of the things when Jesus said, ye are gods, children of the Most High, you know, and he was talking about the DNA, and he was talking about the soul that came from Creator in each individual. He was explaining on that level, that spark in you can become the full flame. And it's even attached to your DNA. And people have not put that all together yet. They'll figure it out later. But when you realize that, again, you're going, wow, I have divine origins. You know, I have a connection to the Creator. You know, it's like, oh, crap, you know, what do I do now? I got to take personal responsibility. And, you know, for everything, I can't blame all these external beings and things and events for other things. And it's going to be really interesting when that truth really takes hold.
Yeah. Truth. And that's the key. Yeah. And, you know, no lie survives. A lie isn't built on truth. It loses its quality over time. And that's why you see problems with the election integrity. It's, you know, the lies, or you see it with COVID-19. You see it with a lot of things. The lies degrade, and there's no hope for a lie. That's the problem with a lie.
And we're going through this quantum acceleration. Some people call it ascension. Everybody has a different word for it, but it's actually a natural cosmic cycle that we're going through. And in that cycle, whatever's not frequency specific, whatever's not rising in frequency, which means you've got to focus more on love and joy and bliss and service to others and things like that, is not going to be here. It's not going to make it. It's going to fall under the weight of its own karma or its own action, reaction, whatever you want to call it. It's all that's going to be amplified and accelerated. And it is as we speak. And that's what we're seeing, the collapse of the old guard and a whole new system coming in, a whole new race of beings, you might say. And truth is like a pressure cooker. You can hold it down as much as you can. It's going to get stronger and stronger, and it's going to blow the lid off. And hopefully whoever's standing there is not going to be in the way of that lid when it comes off, because it's coming off.
Yeah, I agree with you very much, very much.
Yeah, we're coming up to the end of the hour. I know you've been had some speaking engagements lately, and you're probably looking forward to a few others. So if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
Well, the best
way to give that information.
Yeah, the best way to get a hold of me is Don Cain, DonCainAz as in zebra @gmail.com. That's great. The easiest way. And
I think whoever these other groups out there, if you're putting on events, I think Don be an excellent guest, and he brings it down. He brings the higher information, the higher wisdom down, as well as very grounded in the mechanical world as well. So be a great asset. And you know, I can't thank you enough. We're out of time, unfortunately, but thanks for coming on the show. I can't wait to get back to the ranch, and we can hang out and sit out and watch the ships and all the other beings that have been appearing there lately. I think it's going to be an incredible, incredible summer.
Indeed. Indeed.
All right, everybody. Yeah. Thanks, Don. I got to sign off. James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. He said he's Stargate. Keep an open mind, loving heart, pure intent, and don't participate in all this other nonsense. Just let it fold in on itself. Anyway, have a good evening. Good night.